Thank you, and thank you for inviting me here to speak on something completely different, or different in some ways. I could start on an ironic note that everyone will be conscious of underwater cultural heritage once the Chinese have built all these dams. But that was not actually my opinion. Is it something completely different I want to address? In a way it is, but on the other hand, I have heard many things this morning, des intérêts, des décideurs, lenteur politique, the efforts in the trade, the antiquities trade, to always try to get a legitimate pedigree for things, whether that's falsified or not. So I think there's a lot that actually addresses the same issues. When we think of Africa, I don't think we particularly think of a memory of waters, and archaeologists and heritage managers tend to concentrate on their inland areas, and very often to stand with their backs to the sea, for which there's no reason at all in Africa. If we look at the view from Classis Revere rock shelter, where you sit very close to the sea, and where it's impossible to imagine that that early Pleistocene presence disregarded that dimension. For just the pleasure of Andrew Smith, I show a few choppers that were actually found offshore, which are not necessarily indications of maritime culture offshore in of Cape Town, but nevertheless they show that the coastal areas obviously have been very important, and all along the African shores there are these kind of structures which are not very recognizable, but which are very badly recognized as well. They're the fish ponds, undated of all sorts of periods. Then, of course, there's the ships, a maritime heritage which is quite rich, and which incidentally has produced one of the oldest examples in Africa. A bit of a surprise, but a reason to be very much aware of the maritime and naval aspects of African archaeology as well. Now, then there is of course the other dimension of the non-African ships that brought contact, that created all sorts of enormous changes all over the place, and that continue to be bones of contention in African waters. We're talking about African memory in danger today and tomorrow, and about plundering and return. African waters are presently a new Fundgrube. They are actually a treasure trove for international entrepreneurs in the antiquities market. As has been noted before, nice people tell lies, but they try to do that in a way that it's not so noticeable and that there is still some legitimacy on it. Of course, when we discuss the trade in antiquities, we focus on the 1970 Convention on the Means of Prohibiting and Preventing the Illicit Import, Export and Transfer of Ownership of Cultural Property, and the UNIDROIT Convention. But the whole system has a big weakness where waters are concerned. It is about preventing the illicit export and not the undesirable. Not that a convention in that sense could easily be made, but we tend to talk about illicit antiquities all the time. And when at sea, the framework is maritime law. It is a framework that doesn't address the protection of any heritage at all. And with the coming about of exploration in the underwater world, actually the same thing occurred that had occurred 200 years before on land. Very selective explorations were undertaken. As you see, there's a very careful excavation trench here with a good selection of saleable property, and all the shards are being thrown away. And this is one of those operations that were published as great exploration in the National Geographic magazine. Along the African coast, on the east coast, there's all sorts of similar operations. On the west coast, on Cabo Verde, in actually the whole Lusophone world. And, well, happy faces all around, you see that. But are we happy with those faces? Actually, some are not as happy as could be. Perhaps he sees that something else is coming. But all this material, completely legitimately, ends up in places like the auction house Christie's in Amsterdam, which, with another ironic note, is based in the building where, as a kid, I went to visit the Maritime Museum. It was full of the most wonderful things. Anyway, in order to fill that void, the 2001 UNESCO Convention on the Protection of the Underwater Cultural Heritage was negotiated, and it produces a link and integration of maritime law and protection of heritage. And although it was slightly slow in being accepted, it needed to be ratified by 20 states, and then there would be 3 months before it entered into force. This happened on the 2nd of January of 2009. And since then, the number of ratifications has doubled, now counting 40 in all, which is still far too few, but anyway is quite a number. Now today, obviously, we concentrate on Africa, and there is 8 amongst those 40, although some are in what in UNESCO terms is Arab States region and not Africa, which is actually quite a good ratio, but it can be better. One is a ratification that was recent, but that I want to highlight never the same, and that's Namibia. In fact, the occasion, the reason why this came about was a find of a Portuguese shipwreck on the Namibian coast. And as soon as it was found, the first items started to appear on internet auctions, were recognized, were immediately also put in their context, identified with what site it might be, and in a close cooperation with researchers from different countries, Portugal included, the whole site was then made into a site for a thorough study. And the first articles that appear on it in scientific journals like the Journal of Maritime Archaeology are written by local people that have been empowered in doing this research, not papers by the consultants that were involved, which is something which is which I think is a good step. Anyway, 40 countries is not enough, and not enough consciousness on this particular convention is present in Africa. But it is amongst the industry of providing the market with antiquities. They are they feel insecure in a way, and they go at ends to show how fundamentally scientific their approaches are in working preparing for an operation, and then for dividing the material afterwards. They actually go at long ends to pretend that they document everything underwater. They always talk about everything. They document everything, which you never see afterwards, actually. The concentration in conservation is on those items that are saleable in the markets. The other material, which is what actually underwater sites are so strong for, the organic material, just disappears. In this particular instance, the local forces to try and stop this are very active, but unsuccessfully so. And in fact, these operators, well, they publish some things, auction catalogs, but they make a lot of money, not so much through their providing of the antiquities market with antiquities. No. They have opened lifestyle outdoor shops in Hamburg, where the image of legitimacy of their endeavors is being brought into the adventurous life of modern people, adopting the propaganda that they are fully legitimate, adopting a propaganda that is pretty hard nowadays for some of the operators in Zurich that were discussed earlier this day. And that propaganda, of course, is successful also with governments in Africa, because there's such a long tradition of international teams working there rather than building up local capacity. And it's very hard for the local governments to see what's the one and what's the other, what's the treasure hunting operation, or what is an operation that goes after knowledge. Both they do. This is, of course, all possible because of the doctrine, the old standing doctrine of the freedom of the high seas, which also brings other developments to the area in energy, in building of harbors, etc., etc., and which in fact provides an important chance locally as for international companies to also include archaeological survey and preventive archaeology into these projects, as was so clearly explained also by Pierre Desmarais. And one of the reasons that is important is, on the one hand, the intrinsic reason that so much archaeology, if you're conscious of it, can be done. But socially, it's also an important issue because in integrating with that kind of preventive archaeology, the profession, whoever does it, is finally becoming a paying profession, a profession that pays a salary. And it would not be very fortunate if all those salaries went abroad, either to China or to Europe, if they were not that occasion, that challenge was not used for local empowerment. Okay, I risk being accused of political correctness, perhaps, but I really think that's true. There's a big chance for development of care for the memory of Africa, for the care of the heritage underwater and above water, as long as we're conscious of it of being. 40 states is not enough. For coastal states in Africa, Nigeria has ratified, Angola hasn't, but has a strong oil industry. There's many countries. There's a somewhat longer tradition on the east coast of doing things, Kenya, Tanzania. Also, by the way, with some good initiatives by Chinese cooperating with local groups. For coastal states, it's essential to ratify this convention and to strengthen their system of protection of heritage by closing this big loop through which stuff can be exported legally. And for landlocked states, there's no reason not to ratify. So let's also be conscious that it is a good advice to landlocked states to ratify this convention as well. It doesn't give them all the deliberations of how to balance maritime law with heritage protection, as the convention actually does. But in inland waters, there is important heritage as well. I will not talk about the dams anymore. What are we doing as ICOMOS? Because that's the committee on underwater cultural heritage is the committee that I preside. Well, there are a few important books that have been published of late, in a handbook in archaeology, both in the techniques, but including a chapter on the ethics and on the legal sides of the matter. It looks a bit more dull. People always think that archaeology is more exciting than law, although perhaps that is not really true. As ICOMOS, ICUCH, we try to be we have members all around the globe, and to be a site where you can find your information to is this operator an operator that others have had problems with, because obviously the operators work worldwide. And so do we? The last thing we did is produce a tutorial on all the issues related to the Underwater Cultural Heritage Convention and its rules, and it is published on the UNESCO website. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Merci bien. Questions, commentaires? Sous l'eau? Oui, derrière là, voilà.
Okay.